Hey guys, it's episode number 3 of People I Think Are Cool. I am your host, Liz Reed. I'm the co-creator of Cuddles and Rage. Before I get into introducing our guests this week, I'm going to go into some of our upcoming events because this week is like full of really cool stuff. On Friday, we have Baltimore Comic Con, and that'll go on and through until Sunday. This is the first year that they're doing a 3-day convention, so it'll be pretty cool to see who all shows up on Friday. I wonder how many people are going to be taking off work, leaving directly from work. It'll be cool. I'm very excited to swing by and chit-chat with our friends, Dave Perillo and Scott Derby. They're super talented dudes, and it's always kind of during Awesome Con and during Baltimore Comic Con is when we get to catch up with them and say hey. So if you haven't heard of them before, go ahead and look them up because they are really, really awesome dudes and great artists. So also on Friday, huge show, Gallery 1988, Joss Whedon. I'm so excited that our piece made it there. It's always nerve-wracking when you ship a sculpture that you've been working on for a really long time. Because you pack it as tightly as you can. It literally took me 2 hours to pack this guy because I was putting tissue paper around every little inch and then wrapping it in bubble wrap and then adding more tissue paper and then securing it and taping it. And it's, sometimes when I ship a diorama package, like especially a really big piece for a gallery show, I almost start sweating. And that same day we were going off to the beach and it was just crazy. And I was like, I have to get this done, but it made it there. I'm excited for everybody to check it out. If you go on Instagram and you start checking out like Joss Whedon or Gallery 1988 hashtags, it's really cool to see all the stuff that, people have come up with. It's a lot of Cabin in the Woods, Buffy, all his greatest stuff. And it's neat to see everybody's different take on it. I think that's the best part of being in these gallery shows is that you could kind of have a similar idea, but it could be completely different how it's executed. And then also the following week is Small Press Expo, which I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but it's the largest indie comic gathering in the nation, which I just think is incredible. And I think it's super cool and convenient that it's right in our backyard. We were fortunate enough to get in like right at the last second, and we made a new book called Donut Lotto, which we love. We wrote it a year ago and we finally got to put it together, and it's a dark tale, guys. It starts off all cheery and then we just give it the kicker at the end, and it's gonna be interesting sitting there. And whenever you have a book, it's people flip through it and then they read it and they react right in front of you, and it's always kind of like, oh yeah, sorry, oh. And they're like, oh man, no, I'm sad. I'm like, oh no, here, look at this happy little donut, it'll make you sweet. Jimmy's always really good at, you know, being like, oh yeah, that's a tough one, or yeah, that's a good one. Well, they're all good, but some are like, some have a sad note and some have like a secret and like nice lighthearted, you know, that's why we're Cuddles and Rage, flip and flop. So anyways, that's enough about us. Let me get into our guest. Our guest is amazing and smart and wonderful and talented and artistic and great. And I went to high school with her, and so it was really cool to catch up with her. We actually talked for 2 hours, so I had to, edit down the interview because I'm really sure you guys don't want to hear us talking about our high school memories and all that crazy stuff. So, but we went on and on. It was fantastic. And it was almost like all that time hadn't gone by. But yeah, so it's Leslie Torvitz, and she has this awesome, vintage clothing line called Delana Vintage. And she kind of goes through like the history of how she got started, and like I think the coolest part about the interview is all about like the hunt for the piece and just how she accidentally just learned all about fashion, and you know, through collecting the pieces through her passion. I love it when people just stumble upon their passion. Like, to me, that's like the biggest thing, is that you can't, I guess you can seek it out, but I think when it happens, where you just kind of like fall into it, and that's kind of how Leslie's story is told. She just kind of ran into this passion and just started pursuing it, and it grew into this whole thing where now it's their full-time career. To me, like, those are those stories that just make me so excited, because you never know where you're going to end up. You could be in some weird situation a year ago, and then, like, a year later, you can just be rocking it out, doing whatever you want to do. So, yeah, you can check out Leslie pretty much everywhere. She's on Instagram. She's on Twitter. She has her own website, which also includes food, which I love. So you can check her out at Delana Vintage. So enjoy the interview. Leslie?
Hi, Liz.
Yay! Okay, I'll do video, because sometimes people are weird about doing video. So I was like, okay, I'll just call first, so you're not like, there you are! I don't want to, like, keep saying your shop's name and getting it wrong. Delana? Okay. Delina.
Delana.
Delana. Do people ever say it wrong, and you're just like, whatever.
All the time.
Delana.
Yeah. In hindsight, I should have probably chosen a name that's easier to say, because all the time people are kind of, they don't know how to pronounce it, because I just made it up.
What? Okay, that's what I was going to ask you, because I remember reading about it being based on your grandmother, and is that folklore now? I feel crushed. I'm like, oh, you talked about sewing with your grandmother, this fantastic, like, environment of inspiration.
If that's not in your imagination.
Okay.
So I actually started, I kind of got into, before I was doing vintage, I was actually designing my own clothes that were all made from recycled materials. So I was, like, constantly in thrift stores, finding, you know, just, like, searching for fabrics and whatnot.
And when you say thrift stores, is it, like, straight up Goodwill, or is it more, like, antique-y kind of stores, or both?
Well, so when I so the initial store that I started was called Estelle Clothing.
Okay.
And Estelle was my grandmother's middle name.
Ah, okay. That's where the connection came from. Okay.
Cool. So that's where the connection comes in. And that's kind of where I got all of my craftiness and my love of sewing and all of my DIY skills from my grandmother. So when I started that first shop, I thought, oh, that's the perfect name, because, you know, it's kind of an ode to her and everything that she's taught me. So I was spending all of my time in actual thrift stores like Goodwill and basically wherever I could get the cheapest fabrics, you know, high quality, but just, you know, old shirts, old skirts, anywhere that I could find fabric that I really loved, I would buy it. And so I would cut it up, and then I would recreate something new. So that said, I was constantly in thrift stores, and I was always finding things that I thought were just too beautiful to deconstruct. So being the impulsive, I guess, person that I am, I couldn't let them go. So I would buy them, even though they weren't in my size, but I would get them home and I would decide, oh, I can't cut this up, it's just way too beautiful. And a lot of those pieces were true vintage pieces.
Wow.
And so I kind of just gradually had this collection of vintage clothing. And I guess I did Estelle Clothing for about a year, and then realized, oh my gosh, I have all this stuff. These really beautiful pieces that I can't wear. They're just sitting around, and I'm not going to cut them up. And so I decided to put a couple of the pieces on Etsy, which was where I was hosting Estelle Clothing. And I did, and it kind of just really took off, more so than Estelle Clothing, because, you know, designing and sewing your own pieces is incredibly time-consuming.
Yes.
So it was a side thing for me back then too. So I was just kind of shocked, you know, that there was a market for that. I mean, I was wearing vintage clothing, and a lot of my friends have always worn vintage clothing. But I never really thought about it. And that was in 2008 when I started Delana Vintage. So I pulled a couple pieces from my personal wardrobe and threw those in.
How did you know which ones to sacrifice?
Oh, it was hard. So hard. And I actually, funny that you ask, because a couple weeks ago I was looking back, because my shop has evolved so much, because initially I was selling a lot of, I don't know, what I call kind of hipster vintage, which is like, you know, 80s, 70s and 80s. And I don't sell that anymore, but that was kind of what I was selling initially. But I mean, you know, I've been collecting vintage clothing since I was in high school, if not.
I remember you wearing even like a halter top of my mom's, and like, I totally got in trouble. She's like, "You're not supposed to lend out my clothes." I'm like, "Oh, whatever. Like, you don't wear it. What does it even matter?"
I know. I remember that night very well.
Yeah. I was so stupid.
I think that you actually had dug it out of the attic or something.
Yeah, right? I know. Like, she kept all her clothing, like, in the garage. I was like, it's in the garage. Come on. Like,
so funny.
That was a crazy night.
It was. So yeah, I don't know. I guess what I was saying was that I was looking back the other day at kind of the evolution of the shop and, like, how I started and what I started out selling and how that's changed over the years. And I was just looking at all these pieces thinking, why did I ever sell that?
Oh, no.
So to answer your question, I don't know. I wasn't thinking when I sold a lot of my personal stuff initially. And I guess I also just didn't really care at that point in time. So for me, it was like, oh, there's a demand for this. I'm just going to put as much into it as I can and see what happens. When I said I made up the name Delana Vintage, actually, it's kind of a combination of the three of our names.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. I never realized that.
Yeah.
Wait, so do I know the other two, I'm assuming?
So it's D-A.
Yeah, which I know that one.
L-E for myself.
Yes.
And then N-A.
Nana! Oh, Nancy! Okay, so Darcy and Nancy. Okay. Wow, very cool. Very cool.
So that was kind of, I had no idea. Coming up with a name for a company is so weird and difficult.
Yes, yeah, it is hard because that's your brand. I mean, it's going to be what you stick with, and it's going to be very hard down the line to change it if you ever want to.
Right, especially if you're I mean, back then, I never even thought that I would be able to do that full time. You know, that wasn't even a vision of mine at all. It's just like, I'm gonna have fun, like, this is what I enjoy doing and it's fun. So there was no thought of choosing a name
that
I could pronounce or anything like that.
Do you come across a lot of smaller pairs, like, in terms of, like, going through thrift stores and just, like, little rips and tears that, you know, an average person like me, if I saw it, then I would be like, ugh, I don't want to fix this. I don't even want to try. But when you see it, it's just like, oh, this is like a little nip tuck. I can make this look beautiful, you know, with just like a few little changes.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, a lot of the stuff. So what I sell now, like I said, I started out selling the majority 60s, 70s, and 80s. And then when I came back from Thailand and started my shop again, that was about 2 or 3 years ago now, I decided, you know what, that doesn't really interest me anymore. You know, I like thrifting, I love going to thrift stores, but I kind of want to step it up a little bit. So I started going back to Edwardian, early 1900s, turn of the century. And then I don't sell anything past, actually today, I listed something from the 70s, but for the most part, I don't go past the 1969. Kind of like my cutoff date.
And did you have to research designers? I mean, how much did you have to educate yourself on vintage clothing? Because I am just amazed at
like the detailed descriptions that you have on your pieces and the knowledge base that you have in order to share with your audience. Because you genuinely know like who you're buying from or like how valuable the piece is.
Mm-hmm. I think, you know, I never studied anything like that. It's all just kind of been like a really organic education. You know, growing up, I've always been really close with my grandparents, and we always, with my granny, we always went antiquing, you know, in the 80s and 90s, and I've just always been surrounded by antiques and vintage clothing and kind of that attention to detail, I guess. And so when I started selling vintage, it just kind of, I kind of had that pre-existing knowledge, I guess, a little, you know, just like a baseline, I guess, like a really good ground foundation. And I've just kind of picked it up as I go. I've started to build a little library of fashion and decades and kind of done a lot of reading and research. And if I find a piece that I don't really know about, you know, if I see like a zipper that has, I'm constantly Googling things that I see on a piece. So, you know, a lot of times a dress won't have any markings, but you know, you can just pick up clues here and there from the zipper or from the way it was sewn or from the cut, you know. It's just been really organic, I guess.
So you're kind of like a detective. It's like you've taught yourself, like, what to look for the cues. Because I feel like, for me, I would make some sad attempt of taking a picture of the dress and, like, trying to see if Google Images, like, helps me out. And it'd probably take me to, like, Forever 21. I'd be like, that is not it. With this versus, like, your clues. I love it. Because what you're really doing is not only are you selling fashion, but you're educating people on fashion too. And even your posts that are outside of you showing what's new in your store, like you even go back through like family photos. I think I remember seeing photos of your grandmother, of your mom, and just also kind of sharing a bit of your life and fashion at the same time, which I think is amazing that you can like blend the two. And how do you even come across all those pictures? Did your family give them to you, or do you just like kind of say, can I borrow this picture and put it on the blog? Do you have to ask permission?
No, I mean, like I said, my family has always been really tight-knit, and I guess I'm a fifth or sixth generation Texan, I'm not sure exactly, but my family's always been really big on storytelling, and, you know, I would lay in bed at my grandparents' house in the summertime, and my grandma would lay there with me and my cousin just telling us stories about her childhood, and, you know, those stories, I just grew up on them, and so a lot of them are ingrained in my mind. And we would go to my grandparents' house, and my cousin Carrie and I would just love to dig through all the stuff that my granny had. And so, you know, we were just constantly, we'd spend summer days sorting through boxes of photos and asking questions and, you know, getting my granny to tell us who were in the pictures. And so that's where a lot of the family stuff comes in. And it's interesting that you say it's like detective work, because I think that's what I love. Like, that's a huge part about why I love selling vintage clothing, is like, I love history. I've always loved history. And it really gives me a good opportunity to get in and kind of see it in a different light.
Yeah, definitely.
You know? And it's cool because a lot of what people were wearing and a lot of trends were actually influenced by parts of history that we do know. You know, we just don't realize, I don't know, like, oh, why is that dress from the 1940s so much shorter than the dresses in the 1950s? You know, there's reasons for why everything was made and designed the way that they were. And I just find that so fascinating.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's like you said, it's part of our history. And I was just listening to a podcast with the creator of Mad Men, And it was so interesting because I don't know if that gets referenced a lot or if you ask, if people reach out to you for certain pieces that are like from Mad Men or whatnot. But he was talking about how that show really influenced modern day fashion and how a lot of people, like, once that show came out, they just wanted to go and dress, like, as vintagey as possible. Like, especially the ladies or, like, the guys started wanting to wear, like, sharp suits and everything. And, you know, it made sense. I mean, I remember a time when people, not so much clothing that I heard about from a lot of my coworkers at the time, but they were obsessed with glasses, the glassware from that show. And, like, the
like, kitchen glassware?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, they were really into, like, they were like, did you even know that they put lights in the drinks to, like, make, like, the bourbon light up? I was like, okay, whatever. You're taking it too far. But do people ever ask you or, like, reference a show and ask if you have a piece that's, like, similar to it?
Well, for me, the Mad Men trend has really died down. A lot.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm trying to think of what's popular now. Well, there's one thing I love selling to the movies and to TV shows. That's when I get to do that. It's so great.
Oh, wait, so talk about that. I had no idea. Like, what do you sell to certain like productions or?
Yeah, I get inquiries from, let's see, the last one that I think I sent out was earlier this year. There's a show that was supposed to start production in Houston called The Astronaut Wives Club.
Yes, I remember reading about that in the, I get a lot of the television, like, synopsis reports.
I know, sadly, they're supposed to start production again in the fall, but I haven't heard anything.
Interesting.
But yeah, that was the last order, the last really big order of vintage I had was to their production company. Their
So they will buy in the masses from you, or?
It doesn't happen too often, but yeah.
Do you go out and get ice cream when that happens? They're like, Mama can have a little treat. Because rent is paid.
Yeah. Yeah, so I was so excited with the last one. So yeah, I definitely treat myself. I was dancing around my studio and
yes,
smiling for days afterward. So yeah, that was so exciting. And it's also the other reason I love selling to stylists and production companies is because it's so much fun to go and watch that show or go to the movie and try to spy your pieces. So a couple weeks ago, I went and saw Magic in the Moonlight because I had sold a dress, you know, the new Woody Allen film.
Oh, wow.
Because I'd shipped a dress to France when they were right smack in the middle of production, like last year or the year before, I guess. And so I was like, I'm going to go see this movie and see if I can find my dress. And, you know, it's fun to see it kind of styled and in the moment.
Did you see your dress?
No, it didn't make the cut.
Oh my gosh, you should write them a letter. No, you're fine.
Just a whole other thing. It's so crazy how much these production companies will spend on costume for something that just gets cut.
Yes, I definitely know, like, working in television production, it's really interesting, like, how much funding goes into it and then how much just kind of, like, ends up on the floor. And just the whole process is so, you know, elaborate.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a show where you've actually gotten to, like, see one of your dresses or items, like, on the screen?
No. Every time I see, I'm trying to think of what else I've sold to. Bomb Girls, which is a Canadian series.
Oh, I haven't heard of them.
It's actually really good. It's about a munitions factory in the 1940s.
Cool.
And then I was selling a few things to a stylist, but I'm not actually sure what set she was working with.
Yeah, I've always envisioned. I always feel like I'm like, if I ever, because my coworkers, like, they would get to go to the Emmys and stuff. And I was never like close enough to the production process to get to go. But I was always like, I'm going to call Leslie. And I'm going to be like, hey, what do you have? And then I was like, if I'm ever interviewed, I'll be like, I'm wearing Leslie Torbin. And that would be the plug.
You're still welcome to do that anytime.
Oh, thank you. Right now, it'll just be, like, around my studio on YouTube. Which we can still totally do. We can just, like, pretend like it's a big deal.
Yes.
So, have you, yeah, I mean, outside of television, have you ever had, like, any, I guess, actresses or, you know, I guess you mentioned the stylist, but you didn't know the client. Have you had anybody that you've known before?
That I've met?
Yes. Or not so much that you met, but that people would know of, like, any names?
Oh, I don't know. I don't really ever talk about that that much. I don't know if it's a weird privacy thing or not.
They should be promoting you anyways.
What's that?
They should be promoting you anyways if they're going to wear your
Yeah, that's true. Well, for example, this is kind of strange. I don't even know what was happening here, but yeah, I've sold to a few celebrities, but Tommy Hilfiger's wife bought a handful of pieces earlier this year.
Cool. Nice.
And yeah, I'm not really sure. Well, ex-wife, I should say.
Oh, did you follow it afterwards? After, like, meeting them?
No, it was ex-wife at the time.
Oh, okay.
When people order from me, I'll usually, like, sometimes I'll check them out and see, oh, who is this person?
Ah, you'll Google their name.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And with her, it was such a huge, it was such a big order, and the last name Hilfiger, I was like, I wonder if this is his ex-wife, and I looked her up, and sure enough, it was. And so that said, oftentimes, new designers will buy vintage pieces, deconstruct them,
and
rebuild the pattern, which is also a common thing that you see. And so I'm not sure if that's what she was doing or not. I don't know if she was buying it for personal use or if it was for something that they were actually going to create.
Wow, I never thought about that they would, like, deconstruct it. Because, I mean, in some ways, it kind of makes me a little sad. Because you're deconstructing, like, a piece of history, but I guess at the same time, if you want to try and figure it out, you have to take it apart. And at that point, is it like, I mean, have you bought so many pieces of clothing now that you just don't care? Or do you care if, like, you bought this beautiful piece and they're like, oh, we're just going to rip it apart, whatever.
I do care.
You just don't show it. You're like, the client is always right.
Yeah, no, it pains me because it's so difficult, you know, to find vintage, especially when you start going back to, you know, Edwardian now, that's over 100 years old. You know, you find these pieces and they're in mint condition or, like, near mint condition, and that's so rare, and it does make me sad to know that someone might buy that just to deconstruct. Especially, you know, you could find a piece that's damaged and deconstruct that. So, I'm not gonna lie, it brings a little tear to my eye.
Oh, no. But you know, you gotta move forward to keep that head above your roof, or your roof above your head. Yeah.
No, at the end of the day, that probably overshadows my sadness, but it still does make me sad.
Yeah. So, I guess, like, another thing that I checked out, and I've followed this part of your business for a long time too, is, like, the food portion. And I'm always amazed at, like, your photography with your dresses, but also with, like, these, like, creations that you make. And so how did you start incorporating food with fashion on your blog?
Well, when I started the blog, it was mostly an outlet to just promote Delana Vintage. And then when I moved up to Washington and I had all that free time, I didn't have a lot of money, and I thought, you know what, I'm just going to use this as kind of a personal outlet, and I'll still use it to promote the blog, but I'm just going to explore, you know, throwing in kind of that DIY mentality, I guess, and the lifestyle that I was living at the time, which was basically, like, making all of my food from scratch.
Yeah.
And spending as little as possible. And I felt like those were in line with the same, I felt like that was kind of the same mindset as vintage. You know, you're kind of gosh, I don't even know what my mindset back then was, but I feel like it's kind of a similar lifestyle.
No, absolutely. Because, I mean, I think for me, my grandmother's, like, we didn't have the same fashion sets. but I got their cookbooks, and that's what was passed down to me. And they always cook from scratch. It's not the same as, like, how people... I think people are getting closer back to, like, growing their own food and trying to cook from scratch. I'd like to think so. But, yeah, I mean, like, to me, like, your recipes and, like, it does go hand in hand. It doesn't seem, like, so far off from what your brand is because it feels... You get this warm feeling inside of, like, yes, my grandmother probably ate this in her beautiful little lacy wedding dress.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, it definitely, it's about the history for sure and thinking, like, oh, wow, I'm wearing this dress. I wonder what this woman, the woman who owned this before me, I wonder what her life was like. And that's probably what a lot of it was, you know. But bringing it back or bringing it up to modern times, it's kind of, I think, you know, vintage is kind of about, well, obviously it's about fashion and style. But it, for me, I think it started out as sustainability. And I went a year one time just as a little experiment to see if I could do it with not buying anything new, not buying new clothes. And
like not even like vintage, like new to you clothes, like just wearing your own clothes?
No, I could buy used clothes, okay. But I could buy new clothes.
Okay, cool.
With a little tag on it. So I feel like that kind of goes hand in hand with the sustainability of, you know, making all of your food from scratch and, like, really getting down to those basic roots and using what you have, you know, and making a small footprint.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, when I left my job, I've started, I always cooked, but, like, I started cooking things from scratch. And you do save so much money. And at the same time, I mean, I think with writing Food Humor, to learn how you make the food and to learn how much sugar is going into it, because most of my stuff is, like, super sweet. It's just, like, it's scary yet fascinating.
Yes. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, I was going back through some of your food stuff last night. And I was looking at your ice cream recipes because I just bought an ice cream book. And I just want to know, like, did you make those recipes or do you come across them? Like, it's just amazing because I feel like you're, I'm going to sound, like, totally dorky. Your flavor profiles are so enticing.
Thank you. So it's funny because I feel like all of these questions keep going back to my grandparents, but...
They give you everything!
But we always made an ice cream from, you know, we had a little, not a hand, I think they used to use a hand crank, but we would make ice cream in their backyard in the summertime. And then I got on this really big kick when I was living in Austin at one point, and I was using their ice cream maker, and I was just going nuts with the ice cream making. I was experimenting with all types of flavors, and I was using, I'm trying to think, because that's been quite a while since I was really actively making a lot of ice cream like that. But I would find recipes, and I would adapt them, and then I would, because there's all different types of ways you can make ice cream. So my thing was, I'm going to find the creamiest combination of ingredients, and then I'm just going to go from there. So I'll find, like, the creamiest vanilla, and then I'll mix the vanilla, and then I'll make up my own flavors. So, yeah, I made some weird ones, like jalapeno cilantro.
Oh, gosh.
That didn't make the blog cut.
It did not. Oh my! I kind of want to know the ones that didn't make the cut. Do you make your friends, like everyone who's around you, like taste them, or you just like taste it like at midnight and you're like, I'm not sharing this with anyone. This is my little secret.
No, I made my friends, and I think the reason that didn't make the blog cut was because I've got made fun of so much for that combo.
What? You can send it to me. I'm like a little trash can. I'll eat anything.
The other one that didn't make, I remember one that was so good. My roommate at the time was really into bread pudding. Mm. And so he was, like, doing the same experimental thing with bread pudding. So he was, like, experimenting with different breads and different flavors. And so we had a Christmas party, and he made bread pudding. And I said, you know what? Don't make the bourbon sauce. I'm going to make a bourbon ice cream. And it was amazing. It was so good.
I believe it. Oh, my gosh. Wait, so, yeah, I don't... So, with the food, I don't see that as much on your Instagram. Do you treat your social media platforms differently or, like, for the different audience that you're catering to?
I kind of do. Well, you know what? Actually, so the food has kind of... It kind of took a long pause.
I know. Bring it back.
I did. Well, so I brought it back. I have a guest blogger right now.
I saw that. I was like, were all these past recipes from your guest blogger? I was like, please don't tell me so.
Crush your dreams. The past recipes were mine.
Okay, awesome.
But because I do so much fashion and vintage stuff now, I thought, you know what? I know this woman, Deborah Hemming, and she's a food writer, and this is right up her alley. So I'm just going to see if she'd be interested in doing in starting a DIY column. And she said, yeah, that sounds great. And so we started it back Sunday. This Sunday will be her third volume or her third post. But so that's kind of been on my mind lately because I'm deciding, do I want to start incorporating food into my social media outlets or do I want to keep it strictly fashion? Strictly, you know, it's kind of a fine line because I'm reaching out to all of these different groups of people and I want to keep in mind why they're following me. You know,
yes.
I mean,
yeah.
Why do they like these photos? You know, which if I throw food into the mix, is that something that they're going to like, or is that something that's just going to kind of turn them off, you know, because maybe they're all about the fashion and the vintage. I don't know. It's kind of been fun to kind of experiment, you know. When I started Delina Vintage, social media wasn't a thing at all.
Yeah, I was so amazed that you had a blog. I was like, Leslie is famous, and she just has like this huge thing going for her, and I'm so proud of her because, you know, when people looked at early blogs, they were pretty ugly. They were nasty and gross looking, and the blog that you presented was professional and clean and fresh, and, you know, it really felt like something that you wanted to read. It wasn't just like reading your friend's blog because you're like, oh, we're friends. I want to see what you're up to. It was something that I wanted to go back to and to learn more from. And all your skills kind of like came together in one place. And that was really neat to see.
That's so good to hear.
Yeah, surprise. You did amazing.
And you know that I feel like, as much as I said, I don't use my education, my degree was in public relations, all of that writing and kind of all of those skills that I learned have definitely proven useful in starting my own business.
Definitely. I can see that a lot. It's kind of like you have this leg up when you, you know, a lot of people, I feel like they go through this whole journey of finding their voice, but from when I started reading your work, it's like your voice was already there. Like, you already knew, like, who you were. You're very confident, and you knew what you wanted to put out there.
It's fun, you know? I kind of go back and forth between... I started it out as a personal outlet, and it's just a constant experiment, really, seeing what works and what doesn't.
Yeah, no, definitely. That's the great part of, like, being your own boss is that you don't really... I mean, I think at times you have people that you bounce ideas off of, or is it mostly just, like, trusting your gut and putting what you think works for your brand out there?
A little of both, I guess. Yeah. I work from home, and I live by myself, so, you know, a lot of it is internal. I don't bounce a lot of ideas off of people.
Who's your wedding partner? It sounds like you co-own a shop with somebody for a vintage wedding.
I do, and that's actually really exciting. So, it's my mom.
It's your mom? I would have never guessed it was your mom. Oh, that's fantastic. How adorable.
Yeah, so we decided, I get so many requests for vintage wedding dresses.
Oh, I believe it, totally.
So many requests that we talked about it for, gosh, probably over a year and thought, we recognized the demand definitely a while ago, but it was always, do we want to do this? You know, it's like a whole new business. Is that something we really want to do? And then last year we decided to just go for it. Wow. So we launched Beloved Vintage Bridal on August 4th. So it's not even a month old.
Wow. I remember seeing, I didn't realize it was that new because I remember seeing it recently. Mm-hmm. Wow. Congratulations.
Thanks.
What's it like going into business with your mom? I have another friend who works with her mom, and she's like, it's very interesting.
Yes, it is very interesting. What can I say? Mom, I know you're listening. So. No, it's great. You know, it's fun to work with somebody that you know, obviously. It's hard to work with somebody that you know that intimately because there's really no holding back, and it's hard to find a professional level to work on, I guess.
Yes.
If that makes any sense.
Oh, yeah. I work with my husband, so we had to get to a point where I have feelings, too. You need to respect how I feel and share your constructive feedback.
So I don't know why that totally slipped my mind. I didn't even think about it. But you know exactly how it is. It's really, it can be so difficult and challenging, and it's very new for us. And it's a fine line on having a personal relationship and a business relationship and not, you know, constantly talking about our business or having downtime where it's like, you know what, we're going out to dinner with the family tonight. Business is not allowed to be discussed.
Yes, yeah, that's what it definitely heard. You know, I guess you have, like, less pillow talk with your mom. You guys haven't gone to that level yet, but, it is, like, you want to, like, shut it down and figure out, talk about actual life. But it's hard when you're excited about what you do and, you know, and you love what you do to shut it down sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, you were asking about is it hard when people are stopping by during your workday? And that whole shutdown thing, that it's something that I'm still struggling with. I have such a hard time shutting down at night, and you know, working from home, it just makes it so difficult to shut it down.
Yeah, I think you even wrote a post recently about, like, you're getting better about it or, like, working less at night and, like, kind of giving yourself your time. So what do you do to, like, I guess detox from the workday and kind of, like, collect yourself so you can be fresh and come up with new ideas?
Well, I'm still learning every day.
That was a nice, delicate way to put that.
I've gone through cycles, so I was trying to be really regimented at first and say, I'm working Monday through Friday, 9 to 5, and no, I can't meet you for lunch. No, I can't meet you for coffee. You know, this is my work day. No one can interrupt it kind of thing. And that wasn't really working for me because I was working until I went to bed at night, you know, from the moment that I woke up to the moment I went to bed. And then I work, because it's an online retail shop, I have to work weekends too. You know, getting back to the customer, it's like a 24/7 job. And so that wasn't working for me, but I was kind of fighting it, like I said, up until really a couple weeks ago. And my friend was in town and stayed with me for about a month and really helped me to kind of just let go of that mentality and just relax, you know?
Yes, yeah.
So much of, like, I'm sure, like, you know exactly what I'm talking about. So much of being the joy, I guess, of working from home and being your own boss is that you create your own schedule and you can be super flexible. And I was just, I knew that, but I wasn't making it a reality. I was just being really hard on myself and really strict. And so, you know, while he was here, he said, why don't you try to rethink things and just kind of reevaluate? And instead of trying to take Saturday and Sunday off, why don't you just go with the flow of your work? And, you know, if you have a buying trip, if you take a day, yesterday I took half a day taking photos, you know, just kind of treat that as a relaxed pseudo day off. And yes, the next day, you know, you come back from a buying trip, you have tons of vintage to process, start photographing all of your social media, you know, the work gets heavy, and then it kind of, it's just ebbs and flows, really. And yeah, so that's what I've been doing the last couple of weeks, and it's really worked. It's been working for me.
Do you feel like you have more ideas now that you're letting your brain actually take a break?
Yeah, I do. I really do.
Yeah,
it's kind of refreshing.
Yes, yeah, it's surprising how, like, I know everybody says, like, work smarter, but genuinely, like, working less actually brings more to the table, you know. And yeah, I totally had the same issue where I would, especially when I was working two jobs, like, my day job was, like, totally demanding and crazy, and then I would come home and, like, sculpt all night until 2 a.m. and then go back and just, like, repeat it the whole time. And you just look back on that time period and you're like, oh man, I was not putting out my best work there. And I don't know if you feel the same way too, is like, you owe it to your audience, you owe it to the people that you interact with, to give them, like, the best experience that you can give them.
Absolutely. And I get bored. I find myself sometimes, you know, a couple days will get past and I've just been working, 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 and I look back at what I've done and I think, I'm boring myself.
Oh no!
Like, I need to step up my game. This is not...
You need to bring out jalapeno cilantro ice cream.
Yeah, exactly.
So one question that I really, really wanted to ask you is, how do you deal with the sizing? Because I know that older styles, sizing was totally different. And also with your clientele, I mean, it seems like it's... When I think about, like, buying a vintage piece online, I feel like I wouldn't know if it'll fit me or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really common issue and question that I get from my customers, because it is hard, you know? I mean, technically, some things you have will have a tag that says size 8, size 10, but those sizes are meaningless because sizes have changed over the years. So what I do... And it's pretty common practice, I guess, among vintage sellers, is just use the measurements. So, namely, the bust, the waist, and the hips. So, I have a little bit of text on how to actually do that, like how to take your own measurements, which helps. And I just encourage all of my customers to ask as many questions as they want. And as many questions as they can, you know, to ensure that something is going to fit them, because for the most part, I have a no return policy. So it can be scary to buy something, you know, that you aren't really sure, especially if you're new to buying vintage, is this going to fit me?
Yes.
But yeah, I just really encourage questions, and I'm pretty good at, If somebody gives me their measurements, I can let them know if something's going to fit or not.
Yeah, I mean, that's really awesome that you're able to interact with your customer and be able to, like, genuinely tell them, because they, you know, it's like, I wouldn't want to say, not saying that you would sell somebody like a broken dress, because you wouldn't, but, you know, you want the customer to be happy. You want them to receive the piece and to be able to wear it and, you know, to be able to show it off and to share it with their friends.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's exactly what I want. And yeah, recently, actually, I had a girl contact me, and she wasn't sure about the style, because, you know, something can fit you, but is it going to look good on you? That's a totally different question. And She was a shorter girl, and she had a question about a dress that had, like, a drop waist and was T-link, so, like, hits right about your calf. And she loved the dress, and the measurements were right on, but she wasn't sure how it was going to look on her. So she just asked me for feedback, and I said, I've never really thought about it, but I don't know that this is really going to be the right dress for you because of the style. I think something, you know, with a fitted natural waist that's a little shorter is going to be something that works for you. And she was so appreciative, you know, of me just being honest with her. I would hate for somebody to buy something that they didn't love, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's, like, the worst. Like, do you ever shop at Mod Cloth at all? Like, I feel like they would be, like, your competition, or they would buy from you.
I've never shopped there. I look at their site all the time. And when I first started blogging, they did this really kind of genius. I feel like blogs aren't really big anymore. But anyway, when blogging was really big and people were actively commenting and reading blogs, they did a thing. I don't remember what it was called, but they took a single dress and they mailed it to a fashion blogger. And that person took pictures, posted the pictures, they styled it, they posted the pictures on their blog, and then they, in turn, passed it on to another blogger.
Interesting.
And so this dress was, like, going on a tour of the United States through fashion bloggers and vintage bloggers.
Wow.
And that's the only experience I've had with them.
Yeah, I mean, because it made me think about, like, how they treat their shoppers now, which, you know, like, if I bought a dress and if it worked for me, then I could take a picture and write my own review and you would see on there, like, how it fits me if I wanted to share my picture, which I always admire people that do that because it's way braver than what I would ever do. I would never be like, here, this dress is horrible. Look how it fits me. I look very lumpy.
Tell me how bad it looks.
Yeah. I think most of them are, like, positive, and the ones that are negative are more, like, written comments. But, yeah, so I guess it sounds like they took that concept and gave it to their customers, and their customers became, like, the fashion bloggers and got to really show off the product. And I feel like you could do the same thing with social media, because you're absolutely right. I've heard so much more with all the research that I do. I'm obsessed with, like, staying up to date with everything. And, yeah, some of the biggest blogs from, like, even just 5 years ago are saying that they're struggling right now and that the audience isn't there. And, you know, the reality is, and I think it makes sense, it's a natural, like, progression, is that audiences are on social media and they want you to come to them and you want to have this experience. And I think the beautiful thing about, oh my gosh, she's going to go nuts. I think the beautiful thing about being our own, like, small business is that we have the opportunity to give a level of intimacy to our customers that, like, the bigger stores can't do. Mm-hmm. Like, have you become friends with any of your customers just from, you know, communicating with them?
I have, yeah. And it is, that you're so right, because that is the beauty of being a small business. You know, you may not be able to have, for example, I don't take returns, and it's because I'm a small business and I can't really afford to do that. And vintage is the nature of vintage. It's so delicate. It's a weird thing, but I digress. tangents. So yeah, it's fun. It's like, you know, in one way it's social media is inescapable and it can be really overwhelming and hard to take a day off, because it is really important, especially if you don't have a huge advertising budget and it's something that really helps your business. But at the same time, it provides this really intimate interaction with both other vendors and other shops, but also your customer. And it's just really cool to be able to see somebody post a customer post a photo of a dress that they just got and they love, you know, and just kind of, like, start these friendships. And Instagram is really awesome for that.
It is, especially since it's such a visual platform that people are really great about, what I found, like, attributing you when they like regram a picture of yours and making sure that they tag you. And so it's a lot, you know, it's easy just to like look for a hashtag. And I'm sure you probably, do you ever check for your hashtags and see like what pictures come up?
I do, yeah. It's up and coming. I'm trying to get people to use it more, but
yeah, yeah, it's definitely like one of those things where I, you know, encourage where you can.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, but it is, it's fun to be on the same level and feel like, you know, oh, you're not just a customer. Like, I feel like you're actually my friend, you know?
Yes, yeah, where you'd be like, we would totally hang out and, you yeah. know, have a beer together and chill.
Yeah, and have that kind of trust, you know, like, I'm going to give you my honest opinion on whether or not you should buy this because I'm not, like, a gross salesperson, you know?
Yeah.
I'm not going to say what you want to hear if it's not how I really feel.
I think that's where older stores kind of, like, get stuck in a pickle, like, where, you know, they just kind of, like, believe and, like, okay, we're just going to tell them what they want to hear, and then they're going to buy it that way. And I don't, at least for me personally, I don't see my enjoy shopping experiences like that. Like, I do want to feel like buying from somebody that I trust and, you know, I know that, like, love and care was put into it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and I don't know if you feel the same way, but it's kind of been interesting to figure out, well, how personal do I want to get?
Oh, yeah.
How much business, you know, how much of this, let's take, like, my Instagram feed, for example, you know, how much of this feed is going to be actual Delana Vintage and how much is going to be, you know, peeks into my daily life and whatnot.
Yeah.
And finding that balance is,
Well, I feel like the most intimate you got was when you got a haircut that you didn't like. And I was like, I'm sure it's beautiful. You're like, I look like a boy. You don't understand. That was the first time I saw you become vulnerable on social media.
I know. If you're feeling insecure and you're posting this photo, it's opening up all of these critiques and
oh,
you may not want to hear.
Well, because you model your clothing a lot yourself. You know, I think that's I'm always amazed that like you're able to take really beautiful self portraits and also know how to position yourself in front of the camera. Because it sounds like you don't always have a partner to have a photo shoot with. Like sometimes do you take your own photos?
Sometimes. That's totally evolved too. When I first started out, I was modeling all of the product photos myself, and it was a mix of, oh my gosh, the tripod, and I didn't even have a remote. I was actually going up to the camera, and that was just so tedious. And back then, my mom was also helping me too, so I was lucky on a day when she would come out and actually take the pictures of me. Last year, I became really good friends with a photographer, Nicole Malacker, and we've been doing a lot of shoots together. So, you know, but whenever we work together, it's something that you're going to know because I'm going to credit her.
Yeah, I've seen that a few times. So
yeah,
just like...
so like yesterday we went out and took photos together, which is great. And I started to use more models, but it can be difficult because it can be difficult coordinating schedules.
Oh gosh, yes, yeah, I can only imagine.
So, you know, now that Nicole and I have become pretty good friends, it's just so much easier to say, hey, let's go out. What are you doing in 10 minutes kind of thing? You know, it's just, it's a little bit easier. So I think the last shoot, like actual shoot that I did was in March in Houston.
So cool. Well, I've eaten up like almost 2 hours of your time. So, and your family came up before.
Well, I wanted to ask you questions about Cuddle and Rage.
Oh yeah, go for it, man.
So how long have you been doing it full time? When did
full-time?
You quit? Free. Yeah.
I've been doing it full time since I think March, May. I left my job in May, So that was like my big transition period.
So are you, and what about Jimmy? Is this his full-time thing as well? Or
no, he has to work and provide me with health insurance.
That's what I was wondering. Yeah, damn health insurance.
I know, how annoying, right? He's working full-time. And, you know, I think the goal eventually is for us both to do it, but it just takes time. I mean, you always hear about success stories, and so much of success is, like, lots of failure. And also, there's no such thing as an overnight success. It's always like people have been like, I've been doing this for 10 years. And yes, you just found out about me. So I feel like we're in it for the long haul. And we know that it just takes time to build an audience and to grow. And I've thought about this a lot. And I don't know if this has come across your mind, too. I would hate to be an overnight success. I feel like that would be so scary. And you wouldn't be able to, like, prepare yourself for all the feedback that you get. Because I know that in my previous career, like dealing with talent, and talent that has like overnight success, it's scary for them. It's so overwhelming, and they get like very like subconscious, and they're not able to realize that, you know, you're going to have, it's the internet, it's the world. You're going to have people that say like really weird offensive comments, and it has nothing to do with you. Yeah. And you're going to have people that totally love you and are supportive, and you just have to have the confidence and what you're doing, and just let things like roll off your shoulders.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I think I would be more scared about not necessarily the overnight success, but the overnight success / one-hit wonder. I'm so popular so fast that my biggest fear would be, how long is this going to last? You know, like, is it going to last very long, or is it just going to fade away kind of thing? Versus if you're in it for the long run and you're slowly building a business, you're like, you know that you're building that foundation.
Yes,
you know?
Yeah.
Know that you're building customers that really, like, love what you're doing kind of thing.
Definitely. I remember working at a convention in New York this year, and our table mate, he was, like, really, like, he was, like, Reddit famous. Like, really well known for this one comic called, like, Spicy Keychain. And all these people came up to him, and they're like, oh, yeah, awesome, Spicy Keychain, Spicy Keychain. And, like, I turned around and was like, dude, you gotta explain Spicy Keychain to me, because I feel very, like, I feel very bad that, and his name is Will. It's like, I feel very bad that I don't know, like, what your, like, big thing. He's like, oh, yeah, you know, this one comic went around forever, and that's how people know me. And I was like, how does that make you feel? I was like, yeah, it's good. I have people. And he's gotten, like, legitimate work from it. But it's just funny that that was years ago, and people still call him out for that one comic that went viral for him.
Yeah, that's so funny.
Yeah.
I think that's the difference between, like, the vintage world and the creative world. You know, like, for me, it's just like, oh, my shop's getting bigger. I'm getting more sales. Yay! That's what I want, you know? It's not really like I'm going to post, like, one dress and it's going to go viral kind of thing. But for, like, with what you do, you know, you can you're actually creating pieces and you know, you like, crafting these really awesome things. And so you have the ability for that to happen, you know?
Yes, yeah, thank you. So, cool. Well, oh, do you want to see my dog?
Yes!
Jump up! This is the beast that's been barking and ruining our interview.
Aw, what a sweetie.
Gonna have to put a little disclaimer down. Ignore the barking.